Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome back to our penultimate Dark Side of the Ring Season 2 review. This week we're reviewing The Last Ride of the Road Warriors. I don't know why I did that in the Undertaker voice.
I don't know either.
So yeah, next week we're going to get the Owen Hart fall tragedy thing. So that should be pretty interesting, although I'm not entirely sure what kind of new info we're going to get that. With the Owen thing, John Pollock had a really good audio thing.
It was about a year or two ago, right? It was a little while ago.
It might have been a year. It wasn't more than a year ago. It was relatively recently. It was really good, though. But anyways, that's for next week. We talk about that. This week, Last Ride of the Road Warriors. I'll be honest with you, this is kind of the weakest of the bunch.
From a scheduling standpoint, it's interesting. They had this one air right after the Herb Abrams one.
Yeah.
You know, granted, the Herb Abrams one was, it was drug fueled, but it was about the decadence of his lifestyle. This one also, drug fueled, we were texting about it, and it's sad this is the case, but this seems like a story that's probably far too common from wrestlers of that era, worn down by a heavy road schedule, bodies that are bruised and battered. And the expectation is the show goes on, i.e. you don't take a day off. These wrestlers felt a need to self-medicate. And when they do that without any sort of doctor supervision, some mixing that shouldn't be going on is going on. And that takes its toll on one's body.
Yeah, but there is also, you're right. You're totally right. This is a story that's been told a million times. And an added element, and one that's, I think, a bit more germane here, is the fact that Hawk really loved to party, mm-hmm. and Animal really did not. He was more of a mellow guy. And you have, I think the ultimate in this is obviously Ric Flair,
mm-hmm.
a guy who never wanted to be at home because he loved being on the road so much. It just became his life. The partying that went along with that, that's simply how a lot of wrestlers, were able to blow off steam. It's like the adrenaline. I could not imagine. I understand. I mean, I've always said I'd never want to be a wrestler. It's the one profession that I'm fascinated by, but have no desire to be. Like, I'm fascinated by comic books, and I would have always loved to have been a comic book artist, and I still try to dabble in that. I've always been fascinated by movie makers, and that's something I'd love to do. I know you like to fool around with music, and I'm sure you've had it in your head, hey, it'd be really cool to be like in a band, you know?
Yeah. Like, in my younger days, that was a goal. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And so, but wrestling is the one thing, and I think you feel the same way. I've never wanted to be a wrestler because I would be injured all the time. I'd be messed up, but I totally understand from what I've, from anecdotally, when people talk about, you go through the curtain and there's that rush, you got the people there, whether it's, you're in a high school gymnasium or you're in Tokyo Dome, you know, you got all these people and you could manipulate the crowd and they treat you like a rock star, basically.
Yeah, well, I think that's the nature of a lot of live performance. And I think wrestling probably has a lot of crossover in that respect to concerts, performing live musically, yeah. Where, you know, granted, it's a different means of entertainment and storytelling, if you will. But in a concert setting, a really good band who's really good live can bring out a huge emotional response from the crowd.
So I understand, you're absolutely right, and I understand why some people, it would be in their nature to want to continue the thrill, because ultimately you're getting a rush of, you know, your endorphins or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And you're getting that thrill, you know, the excitement of the crowd. And for some people to keep that going, you know, that's probably a hard thing to crash from. You know what I mean? And so partying and living it up, and especially in the 80s, cocaine helped keep that rush going, so that they didn't experience the crash. I like to live my life at a completely medium keel with no highs and no lows.
Exactly. You can't crash if you never get too high. That's my philosophy.
Exactly. But I mean, it's funny, like even in my own limited way, like whenever we accomplish something that's you know, something that, oh man, we couldn't have planned it any better, you feel that little bit of a high, you know?
I mean, there's been times when we've done stuff and it's gone really well and you feel there's a sense of accomplishment and there is a rush from it.
Yeah,
obviously. Sure. Totally. 100%.
Yeah. So I couldn't imagine what that's like to the, you know, times a thousand, but I imagine that's probably what it's like. Mm-hmm. And so you want to keep that going. And, you know, we've heard that story be told a million times in wrestling as well. And here you have it. And I think maybe the more interesting aspect of the Road Warriors is that you had two guys who were so similar. They were so similar, in fact, that they were paired together as a tag team, but they were completely diametrically opposed personalities as it pertains to dealing with the rush.
Yeah, it definitely seemed to be the case. And there was, you know, it's pretty illustrated very clearly in this particular episode, where they go at great lengths to detail Hawk, his drug intake, his proclivity towards partying, and Animal himself says, you know, after the show, I'm more inclined just to go have a nice dinner, go to bed, so I have a good workout the next day. Hawk, on the other hand, when they're in Japan, he was apparently partying with members of the Japanese mafia.
Yeah.
You know, he wanted that rush to sustain, seemingly. And you know, between that, it was entirely that feeling of being in front of the crowd, the adrenaline rush you get from that. You know, they portray him as a bit of a wild card throughout his early life, getting in fights, establishing his turf, punching himself in the face to kind of toughen himself up in preparation of those fights. You know, going out, being a bouncer at a bar, a somewhat seemingly notorious bar in the Minneapolis area, where they were paid to fight. You know, he just seemed like a pretty tough guy who enjoyed thrills, whether it be fighting, taking drugs, going out there wrestling. It just seems like that he enjoyed the adrenaline rush of doing those things.
Yeah. And it's seemingly, because they interview his father and his brother. And it extends like way back, because in high school, he was known to pick a fight here and there. I think he was voted like class bully or something.
Yeah. It is like his adolescence. Yeah.
Evidently, that was something that predated us by about two decades. Because I don't remember there being a class bully in my yearbook.
No, I don't think that was anything that was typically honored.
Celebrated. Yeah,
no.
Really?
No.
So anyways, yeah. Once again, just sort of refresh myself, I got notes up from 411mania.com. So I like to give credit where credit's due, because I wasn't sitting there taking notes during this. Scott Norton was interviewed. Barry Darso
was interviewed. That was cool. Interviewed. I had a bit of a small interaction with Scott Norton at the last StarCast. He just seems like the sweetest dude, man.
He's so mellow.
He never met me before. He walked by our booth, just put his hand on my shoulder like that. Just seemed like the warmest, nicest guy.
Doesn't that make you now a member of the NWO?
I guess so. Don't have to too sweet anybody. Scott Norton just touches your shoulder.
Yeah, dude, that's it.
He just seemed like the nicest dude.
Yeah,
you know, he's huge. He's still huge and jacked, mm-hmm. and you know, he always came off as so darn mean on TV. But man, he just came off as such a sweetheart.
I would love a documentary just on Ed Sharkey, the trainer.
It seemed like back in those days, like when you're doing wrestling training, you like legitimately fight for weeks or months. And then once they determine if you're tough enough to continue, you're like, okay, this is how it really works.
Yeah, sometimes they wait until you're in a match or after your first match to tell you, hey, let me smarten you up. Why is it they were so, I mean, I get it. Okay, you're protecting the business. But I don't know, man. I feel like, I asked my dad, I've said this a million times.
Yeah.
My dad and Uncle Joe used to go to Memorial Auditorium to check out the fights, the wrestling, the pro wrestling, right? Yeah. Pat Patterson was there. I forget some of the other names. And I said, Dad, do they know it's fake? Yeah, of course we knew it was fake.
Yeah.
Now I'm sure there's probably some people who didn't think that.
How many wrestling documentaries have we watched when people go into training and they think it's real?
Right.
It happens. And here's the thing. It's like, but I wonder if the training mentality back then, which was, hey, you guys fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then at a certain point, we'll show you how to actually, you know, throw worked punches, so on and so forth. It was one attitude of several, seemingly. You know, there's that one dude who pooped and put in his armpits and use it in training. it's a way to determine who's tough enough to continue and mm-hmm. who isn't. You know, that's what it feels like. If you're tough enough to go in there and actually take a punch, a real punch, not a worked punch, you know, keep going with a broken nose, you have passion for it, you have the toughness for it, and then once you get past that phase, then we'll teach you the secrets of the business, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see here. Ed Sharkey is 84 years old.
Wow.
It always trips me out how like the guys who were doing it way back, like, so he would have started, yeah, he, when he was 20, it was 1956, so yeah, he was like with Dez and those guys. Like the guys that are like who got started in the 50s, a lot of those guys are still alive. But mm-hmm. then when you get to the guys wrestling in the 70s and 80s, a lot of those guys are dead. Mm-hmm. That's probably squarely because of coke and steroids.
And having to work 300 days a year.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like a whole documentary, and not a dark side either, I mean, I guess, but like a whole documentary could be on Ed Sharkey because, you know, the fact that he never even got up when they were training to like show him how to do stuff. Like you said, it's just a fight. And then, you know, we'll teach you stuff. And then he'd get up to leave and be like, don't try to do anything without me here. Yeah. And then, of course, people would get hurt because they did that.
Yeah.
But Ed Sharkey, yeah, like I'm looking at his Wikipedia entry here has just a litany of names that he's trained. Let's see here. Bob Backlund, Lenny Lane.
I mean, this episode of Dark Side really solidifies that, particularly in the 70s and 80s, like Minneapolis was a pro wrestling hotbed.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
How many people either from the area or moved to that area got their start
mm-hmm.
in that particular time frame? It's insane.
Medusa, X-Pac, Jesse Ventura, Rick Steiner, Eric Rowan, Rick Rude. Yeah, like there's a ton of names here. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of interesting. But I guess like I've never known that much about the Road Warriors. Like, you know, I've seen plenty of their matches. Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting that I've always found it interesting. I mean, we've known this for a long time that Paul Ellering was their manager, like not just in front of cameras or in front of the crowd, but he legitimately was their manager. And he was the guy who said, hey, let's not commit to one place. That was to me very fascinating that he came up. That he had the idea, hey, you guys are a big deal, and you can be a big deal wherever you go.
And it's interesting to see how quickly they became a huge deal. So they put them together. They kind of had a biker gimmick to begin with. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they showed up in Georgia Championship Wrestling, here's the belts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The champions now.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until a little bit down the line that they got the shoulder pads and the face paint and the mohawks and all that. And seemingly within a year of their formation, roughly based on the timeline presented here, they were like one of the hottest acts in all of wrestling, or traveling all over the world, making tons of money, I'm sure. So that was pretty fascinating how quickly they went from formation to superstardom, to more or less being one of the few acts that that transcended territories.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, it extended to Japan. They were huge there. Animal talks about making it in the national news, like the national press in Japan, when he slammed Killer Khan. Because these are just huge guys. And then that's when they start talking about Hawk hanging out with the Japanese mafia. So that's terrifying. Let's see here. They talk a little bit about...
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, let's jump ahead to the most interesting aspect of this is Vince McMahon taking everybody's finisher in a strip club.
So according to Brett, in his book, everybody... And look, I don't think I'd be able to take a doomsday device, even if it was soft. But according to Bret Hart, I read this. Vince took it. They gave it to him a bit. So everybody was doling out their finishers in a very soft manner, except for Bret. I don't think it was a sharp. I forget what it was. What other move it was that Bret gave him? But apparently, he took it kind of hard to Vince, and Vince demanded he buy him a drink because of it. But yeah, apparently a strip club and Vince took all that shit. But I mean, this is one thing we didn't mention, but Fightful had a story just the other day about Rob Gronkowski, mm-hmm. and how he didn't want to do that dive at WrestleMania and Vince did it.
Apparently the same thing happened in the Money in the Bank match, the shooting for that. Maybe Son was nervous about that spot. So, oh, maybe not. Maybe Becky was talking about the Gronk dive. Cause I think initially the idea was like, oh, Vince has taken that spill.
The Oscar jump?
No. Well, I don't know which it was, but I think it wasn't one actually. Sorry. I think initially when it was, cause Becky mentioned something about Vince doing a leap or something.
So people were
around the time of when she mentioned that, it was around the time they'd shot the Money in the Bank match. But then I think Fightful corrected. No, it was the Gronk.
Okay.
The Gronk jump.
And then Gronk still didn't want to do it. And it set everything
delayed things back hours and stuff,
which is weird.
That's probably why he left. He said, I don't want to do wrestling. I'm going to go back playing football.
Yeah, smart move. So anyways, they talk about, I wish they had talked a little bit more about this, but they talked about it mainly as a way to talk about how tough these guys were, that Hawk worked that scaffold match with the Midnight Express with a broken foot.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they had talked about the fact that everybody blew out their knees in that match. Oh, what a mess.
Terrible idea.
Yeah, just, yeah. God, watching Jim Cornette fall. Oh,
blow out both his knees. They talked about SummerSlam 92 at Wembley Stadium, where Vince apparently was going over the match with him, and Hawk was like, no, we're going to do it this way. Apparently he was on some sort of hallucinogen. Mm-hmm. And so they were in some sort of, initially some semi-main event, but so they got bumped to the first or second match on the card against Money Inc. Mm-hmm. And then Hawk proceeded to try to do that match inebriated.
Yeah.
Animal said, we can't do the finish because he's going to fall off the top rope. And they show footage of Hawk just kind of lingering in the middle of the ring. Animal's trying to orchestrate the end of the match.
He's an absolute disaster. And then when he gets the pin, Hawk just goes.
Well, like Hawk, when he realizes what's going on, he goes back to the apron to get out of the ring for the pinfall. See, the pinfall happens. He gets back on the ring. And celebrates.
I like that. Which one was it? Hawk was a big fan, and it wasn't He-Man, because the Legion of Doom was not in the He-Man lore. The Legion of Doom was the Justice League from Super
mm-hmm.
Friends.
Mm-hmm.
So contrary to Paul Ellering believed, Hawk was evidently a fan of the Super Friends, which is kind of funnier than being a fan of He-Man.
Well, maybe he was a fan of both.
Yeah, you know, he could have been. He totally could have been. I mean, he was just a Saturday morning cartoon guy.
Yeah.
But the Legion of Doom was totally Lex Luthor's band of misfits.
Yeah, that was.
Back in the Legion of Doom.
Yeah. Those were my favorite shows growing up.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So they say essentially that Wembley show was kind of the end of the first phase of mm-hmm. the Road Warriors / Legion of Doom. As Animal tells it, one of the first shows after the Wembley show was in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Hawk no-showed that. Called Vince's secretary, said he quit, and then he went off to Japan and formed a new iteration of the Road Warriors with a new partner.
Yeah.
While Animal's in the States like, hey, this is our gimmick, man.
What are you doing? That was actually kind of funny because it's like you know, Larson moves to Japan and finds like a NWO Japanese Steve guy. Hey, man. That was kind of funny.
And then it's, you know, I don't know if they had any reunions because they didn't mention it in this episode.
Right.
But they more or less, in the narrative of this episode, say the reunion came about, I believe, in 1997 in WWF with LOD 2000 when Draws was the third member. I'm guessing one, I guess Vince really wanted to do that story about Hawk having substance abuse issues on TV. Yeah. Two, probably Draws was introduced as a bit of an insurance policy should substance abuse issues come to a head again.
Yeah, for sure. I remember, I mean, that's when you and I were totally watching, and even
I remember that fall off the top of the Tron, man.
Yeah, even back then, we were like, this is tacky as hell. Mm-hmm. Like, even back then, we were like, this is really bad.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess with Vince, it's like, you never know what's going to work and what isn't, what people are going to respond to and what they won't, because there's plenty of tacky stuff that totally worked back then, but this was a bit much.
You know, there's storylines that, especially when someone is going through substance abuse issues and it's exploited for, like, even today, like whenever someone brings up Jeff Hardy's substance abuse issues, which is like all they do now,
yeah,
in promos, I still cringe about that.
Like,
I feel like some, you know, like some stuff that's that some stuff hits a little too close to home when you're trying to exploit it for storyline purposes, especially with Jeff, and hopefully he's in a good place now. But you know, considering the issues he's had with that, I just worry for him that constantly being brought up, it would be a source of potential anxiety. I don't know, but it always, it makes me feel uncomfortable.
No, I feel you on that. I mean, one of my things about that is, I mean, geez, it's been less than a year that Jeff Hardy was last arrested, you know? So it's like, this is still like an ongoing thing.
It's still pretty fresh, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm with you on that one. And on top of that, with me, the Jeff Hardy thing, it's just so unoriginal.
I know.
Like, they did that in 2009 with CM Punk and him.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need that again. It's boring to me at this point. And on top of that, what you're saying, it's just kind of cringy because it's like, man, this is like an active thing this guy is probably still dealing with.
Yeah.
It's just too, it's easy, it's lazy, and it's just, I don't know, it's not interesting to me.
No.
I liked when Randy Orton was sticking a screwdriver in his ear. I thought that was fun.
Interesting.
So, I mean, like I said, this was, I don't know, probably the least interesting one because it did. It told such a familiar and sad and, you know, in a very much sad story. But I was like, man, I was kind of looking forward to it because, you know, I didn't know a whole lot of history of the Road Warriors. And certainly you get that. But I do feel like it focused a bit too much on the dark side aspect, which is the name of the show, as it pertains to, you know, Hawk's drug issues and his death. I'm not sure what else they really could have done, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I don't. Mm-hmm. But it's just, it's a familiar story. It's a sad story. And I like the stuff that, like, even I was really looking forward to the Herb Abrams one. And that one, it was like Wolf of Wall Street. I'm like, at a certain point, you get, you know, numb to how much cocaine they talked about. And that to me is like the least interesting thing because it was the 80s. Everybody did that. Well, early 90s, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know. I'm looking forward to next week with Owen Hart. So like even watching the out of focus recreation footage from the Owen Hart one is hard to,
it's tough, man.
It is. It's really tough. And you get, you know, with the John Pollock thing, you know, there's plenty of quotes in there, but to hear the story be told, and I'm sure they're going to have JR because JR has appeared in these before, and JR was obviously right there.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I doubt Lawler's going to be in it because he's still contracted with the WWE.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, this is it's going to be a pretty sad one, and we'll see if there's any new information. There's already so much information out there with regards to the Owen stuff.
Yeah, we'll see.
But that'll be it. And then we'll figure out what we'll do on Sundays from there.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyways, thanks everybody for watching. We appreciate it. Till next time, we'll talk to you later.
Goodbye.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angi.com.
Do you follow automotive news, or do you just like cars and want to see what the heck's going on? Well, then you might like Donut Media's new podcast, The Big Three. Hi, I'm James Pumphrey, and every week, me and my co-host slash two of my top five friends, Nolan Sykes and Joe Weber, unpack the latest and greatest in automotive news and trends on The Big Three. You'll also get a lot of laughs, hot takes, and personal insight on cars from the biggest car guys in automotive media. So, whether you're a hardcore enthusiast or just a person who goes, that's a good looking car, check out The Big Three, available wherever you get your podcasts, or you can watch the full videos at Donut Podcasts on YouTube.